Hey everyone, today I am in studio with Wendy Davis. Now you may recognize her from the premiere of the brand new show on O Network, Love Is... But I bet you also recognize her from 117 excellent episodes of Army Wives, or maybe from some of your favorite other shows like Scandal and Major Crimes. We will be talking to Wendy. All this and more coming right up.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now... let the buzz begin.
There's my clap. I didn't even tell Jeff. He knows. I love entering with the clapping. It's my favorite.
Exactly. It feels just walk so around good. With clapping.
Exactly.
Nice.
You can bring a team of clappers.
I love that. That's a good idea.
Hey everyone, I'm Zoe Hewitt, and I'm in studio today with Wendy Davis to talk all about Love Is.
Yeah.
Now, you guys just premiered this week.
So excited. So excited. Okay. And fans seem to be really responding, mm-hmm. So we're really happy.
Now, the show is so cool because it's based on the lives of the creators, Mira Brock Akil and Salim Akil.
Yeah.
And so, what was it like getting a script and learning it's actually based somewhat on a true story?
Right. Well, you know, it's very interesting because I got this job around pilot season, and I was reading lots of scripts, and I always have, like, a favorite. And this was my favorite script. The moment I read it, I was like, oh my God, I love this script so much. And then to find out that it was based on loosely based on the life of Mara and Salim, you know, who are just two, you know, juggernauts in the television business. You know, I was absolutely thrilled. And then I got a little bit nervous when I actually got the job because, you know, I'm playing a older version of her, so I felt like I might be competing with what she may think she's going to be years from, you know, in a few years from now. And so it was a little bit, you know, nerve wracking to to have the person that you're playing sitting right there, like, no, I wouldn't do that.
Right,
I just wouldn't do that.
Right, there could be a lot of judgment.
Yeah, right.
And so, for anyone who hasn't seen the show, you can actually catch the entire first episode on the O Network's website. But it's told in a really cool way because your character is in the future, so 2027. But the story actually takes place back in the 90s.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's a really neat juxtaposition of past and future.
Yeah, totally, totally. And you know, the thing is, like, you know, I was a little bit nervous initially, but she was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's a collaborator and she's a creator. She's a content creator and she's an artist. So, you know, she pretty much just gave me the reins and allowed us to create these characters. So it was just really amazing. And I do love that little component. It's almost as if I get to say to younger Nuri, you know, honey, don't worry about this, worry about that. You know, like Nuri is so sort of career focused. Mm-hmm. And I was very much like that when I was that age. So it's nice to be able to reflect and share this wisdom with the audience. Even though it doesn't get to Nuri, it gets to young ladies in the audience.
Absolutely. And we actually have a photo of you with hair, just like the actress who plays Nuri with the short hair. So we'll pull that up. We've got that up on screen. So very coincidentally, you had the same haircut.
Yeah. I mean, exactly as I was around her age, I cut my hair because, you know, I got tired of people relating to me as, you know, like people related to me as my hair. And I did want that. So I cut my hair.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because something that I realized when I was going back and thinking of the first episode and thinking of wardrobe from 2027 and thinking of the future was there's a really interesting part in this pilot episode where Nuri originally has long curly hair, but she cuts it all off very early in the episode.
Sure.
And so now we see your character who has the long curly hair again.
Yeah.
And I was wondering about that. Are we going to see any of that evolution? Was that a conscious choice that you will have a different hairstyle from younger Nuri?
I don't know. I mean, just like when I was that age, I cut my hair for a very specific reason. I wanted to be taken more seriously. I felt like there was, almost exactly the same reason why this character Nuri cut her hair. I did not want to be, you know, just considered like light skin with long hair. I just felt like that was so limiting. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to be considered just a good, talented actress. Yeah. So the first thing I did was whack off my hair. but now, I had different, at that age, you know, I had different sort of feelings about things. So now I really don't, you know, my hair really doesn't matter to me so much.
In the same way. But it's interesting because your choice of words is almost exactly what's used in the show as also the explanation, like light skin with long curly hair.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's like a very specific sort of cultural phenomenon that other women of other races don't have to deal with?
Yes, I do. And, oh, we're going to get real? We're going to get real right now. Okay, here we go. I do. I feel like there is... there's a lot of, I want to say prejudice within the black community. And we call it colorism. It's something that actually happens within the black community. And it's something that I'm absolutely opposed to. I think, I always say, like, hey, when the Klan come, they're coming to get us all. They're not going to go, oh, you with the long curly hair, you can stay. I think they're just going to... So, you know, really my feelings about it are like that we're all family, you know, that, and not just people of color, but, you know, really the whole planet. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're all really just cousins and your ethnic background or, I mean, we're all Americans and what distinguishes the differences in us basically are like what sides you have for Thanksgiving.
I like that.
If you're eating collard greens, you're black.
Or from the South.
Or from the South. Well, here's one. Okay, so if you like sweet potato pie versus pumpkin pie. So, African Americans. Okay, wait.
I was going to say, what if you like both?
Okay. Well, then that just means that you're just a universal person like me. Yeah.
So, but it's interesting talking about it to me because watching the show and even thinking of other shows that Maren Brock have created, or as I call her, and Salim have created, like Girlfriends, like they're shows that a lot have, yes, have that specific focus and the characters, like there's a reason they're from a specific culture, but it's also universal. And that's what I thought watching the show. It's not just like, oh, these characters are from one race, so therefore it's this. Yeah. It's understandable and relatable to everyone.
Well, I think that's, I mean, love is universal.
Right.
And I think what's really brilliant about this show and something that has been needed for a long time is that when you watch this show, it does have a specific flavoring, right, which is that of the African-American community. But it is really just about two people falling in love and dealing with the complications of love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's really like it's love with a little paprika and bacon fat, basically.
Depending on where you're from.
Depending on where you're from. It's just love with a slightly different seasoning. But what I love about this show is that you know, the show is loosely based on them, and they choose to air, you know, dirty laundry. Not necessarily their dirty laundry. I don't really know their story, but, you know, what they're saying is that love is complicated. It is challenging, but it's worth it. Mm-hmm. And that's a message that a lot of people can you know, glean onto and, you know, take us good advice.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And your role is interesting because you were actually a recast. So how was it stepping in knowing that there was something that didn't quite work initially? And so stepping into a group that had already started.
Well,
and
that was probably one of the most challenging things for me. I mean, I'm an actor. So, and I love actors. So, I immediately felt a great deal of sympathy for the woman who, you know, they chose to go in a different direction. Mm-hmm. I felt a lot of sympathy for her, and you know, so it was interesting. I mean, it was on the one hand, I was happy for myself, but then on the other hand, I really was feeling her loss, and. So the cast was very generous with me. I could tell that they loved her deeply. Mm-hmm. I could tell that Mara loved her deeply. I could feel the impact that she had on the cast and the crew. Like, everyone loved this woman. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just sort of allowed that loss to be there. And then when they were ready to be friends with me, you know, they all came around one by one, but they were all really generous. But I do want her to know that she, you know, had an incredibly positive impact on the cast.
Right. And I mean, recasting is that sort of awkward thing. Like you say, how on one hand, like, yeah, you're happy, you got a really cool job. And on the other hand, it's a very public forum for people to see, like, oh, this other person. And I mean, there have been lots of instances where it happens. It's not like it's so uncommon. But it is. It's this tricky balance of...
It happens all the time, and generally doesn't have anything to do with that person's ability. Yeah. It oftentimes has something to do with their energy more. And because she was a very, very talented woman. I mean, I watched a lot of her stuff, sort of trying to figure out, like, hey, what potholes do I need to avoid? You know, and I watched her... Yeah, I've seen some of her acting, and I thought, this lady's good. I don't know what the problem was, but she's awesome.
And coming in and speaking of fit, and we talked about hair in the future of 2027, but what about
actually
wardrobe?
The show is 2020. It's actually 2020. Initially, it was going to be...
Is that what it was? That it was initially? Because I saw 2027.
It was going to be 2027, but then they decided to make it present day.
Okay. Yeah. So then that explains it, because I was like, how do you think about the wardrobe?
I think that was probably one of challenges. Uh-huh. Like, what is going on in 2027? I mean, I think there was just like, they would have to kill just too many brain cells thinking about this future when that's really not what this story is about.
Right.
It's about the journey of this couple and, you know, not only in the 90s, but also... They've come this far, and they're still facing facing challenges, and also reaping the rewards of this, you know, deep love that they have for each other. They're still on a journey.
Which is only just beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and the other thing I thought when I was watching the show, especially with the time period of the 90s, was Spike Lee's She's Gotta Have It, which would have just come out then in this world, like maybe 4 years prior in 86.
Totally.
And so it's also then in this world, like very early on that we're seeing a woman with so much sexuality that it's not looked down upon. Like there's this great scene where her mom comes in and says, like, come on.
And love tells that the guy, scene.
Like, come on, get out.
So good. I love that scene. That was so amazing. That's Tammy Townsend who plays her mom, and she's so funny and just great. Yeah, I mean, but I do love that about the show as well. I feel like this show is groundbreaking in so many ways, and that's one of them. You know, we have this like really, you know, powerful woman who's very comfortable with herself and comfortable with her body, and she has multiple lovers, and you know, she doesn't have any sort of negative feelings about that. And I love that she's, you know, passionate about her career. I mean, this is like a dream role. And I'm happy that I get to play Wiser Nuri, because I've never had an opportunity to actually develop a character like this before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And was that what appealed to you the most when you first saw the script as well?
Yeah, I think because the relationship is very complicated.
Yeah.
You know, I love to see three-dimensional characters. Mm-hmm. And one of the things about Mara is, I mean, she's a wordsmith. I mean, this woman, I would read the scripts and I'd either be just laughing, you know, my head off, or crying, or I would always like having some kind of emotional reaction and just reading the script. And I'm like, I love this woman's writing. I don't know if it's just because she's so universal or if it's because I can relate to it so much, but I totally forgot the question.
No, just what appealed to you that if this was
it.
Part of it. Which, right, and it's very unique to be, well, you know, we always talk about what would you go back and tell yourself, and here you get to sort of live it out within the context
of the show.
Yeah,
right, exactly. Like, what would you tell yourself if you, you know, if your older self, you got to talk to your... your 20-year-old self, what would you say?
I would say, stop eating so many eclairs.
I would say, eat all the eclairs you want. You got to burn it off.
Yeah,
when you hit 40. Yeah.
Dialing back.
Dialing back at 40.
So where do we see your character going then in the rest of the show?
Good question.
Maybe I should say, what can you share with us about where your character is going?
I really don't know. I mean, you know, it's about the ups and downs of a relationship. So obviously there are going to be some ups. There are going to be some downs. And that's all I know.
That's all you can share.
Yeah.
And so what about being on the OWN network? Do you think that that is the perfect home for the show?
Yes.
And?
I met...
I was, yeah.
Her.
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, so my friend says to me before, you know, the premiere, he's like, look, don't fangirl Oprah. And I was like, me? Come on. I've met some of the biggest people in this business. Right. Do I look like I'm going to fangirl Oprah?
But it's Oprah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I see Oprah, and I'm just, oh my gosh, it's O. And, what was so miraculous? I was sort of like, you know, she was the queen bee, and there were lots and lots of people around her. And I was standing back, and she turned around, and she just opened her arms, and she said, "Wendy," and I just went straight in. Just
perfect
was like, "Thank you," you know. And I just gave her this huge hug, and she felt like every mama, you know, like. She just felt like a mom, and she was great. And she said, when I saw your audition, I said, Wendy's it. And I was like, really? You saw my audition? Like, wow. You know, I just, you know, I don't know who I thought was going to be watching it, but she saw it and she knew my name. So that was really cool.
That must have felt so gratifying and amazing. Yeah. Like, Oprah knows me.
I know. I was like, can I call you? Oh, never mind. Oprah, I'll call you Oprah. But yeah, I mean, it was a little bit like that because, you know, she's such a humanitarian, and she's so much more than just a television personality. She is a woman who is committed to making a difference for people. And, you know, when you meet someone like that, I mean, it's a little bit like meeting the Dalai Lama in a way because of just the light that she has and the commitment that she has to making a difference for people. And I think this show is part of that. So when you meet somebody like that, you almost feel a little bit inadequate, like, you know, maybe I should, I don't know, help somebody.
Maybe I should open a school.
I don't know. Yeah. I should open a school. You know what I mean? Yeah. You kind of feel like you got to step up your humanitarian game when you meet Oprah.
But it's funny that you described that she opened her arms to hug you, because I interviewed someone else from one of her shows who almost had the exact same description. So it's really funny you said, like, it was like hugging. I think she said her aunt. And
yeah,
so
totally.
It just makes me think how genuine she must be that now two different women have described in almost, you know, very similar detail about meeting her. And I really want her to hug me.
I know,
me
you
now.
Should. Like, you should. If you ever have a chance to hug Oprah, you should do
but
it.
But now, what if she doesn't try to hug me?
No, I don't think so. Because I really feel like she's so transformed. She's literally like on another plane, another level than most of us. And I feel like she's basically just the walking embodiment of like love and empowerment. So she's going to hug you. She's going to, trust me. She'll hug
you. I'm going to tell her that. Wendy said Oprah, that you need to hug me.
You'd hug me.
I would really
like that. Yeah, like I just feel like she's so, you know, there's like a spiritual energy that she's carrying with her that's just all love and and warm fuzzy goodness, you know. So
warm good things.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And speaking of warm good things.
Yeah.
So on the show, there are definitely a lot of characters, but you are pretty much relegated to one co-star during all of your scenes.
Yeah, right.
So how do you keep all the warm good things and fun going when it's like, there's all this happening over here and you two are over here, essentially?
Yeah. Well, the thing that's so great about our characters is the younger characters can be going through a very challenging time, And because we have some distance in terms of, I want to say, in terms of the time that's gone by since that very challenging event, you know, we can see it as a very, you know, sort of funny thing or, you know, it, we don't take it as seriously. I mean, I remember in high school when my high school boyfriend didn't take me to the prom, you know, I was like, well, that's it. I'm just going to end it. You know, I mean, I was very, that hurt me so much. And now when I go home and I see him at the gas station pumping gas, I'm like, this is so great. I'm so glad you dumped me. Do you know? I mean, so it's like looking back.
Yeah.
It's comical to think about how, you know, just emotionally, you know, scarred I was because I didn't get to go to the prom with him. Now I'm just like, oh, thank goodness.
But in the moment, those things are very real. And you have a daughter yourself. So then how do you, especially since your character is in this world of looking back, how do you handle it with your daughter? And those things are very real, even though, sure, we know down the road it's okay.
It's challenging because, you know, she's 15 and she thinks that she knows everything. And I still want to protect her. I want to educate her, you know, like, you know, hey, if you ever go anywhere, cover your drink. I want to educate her.
That's an important one.
I mean, that's important.
It's important.
I want to educate her, but I also want to protect her as well. So I'm still trying to figure it out.
Find that balance.
Trying to find that balance.
Now, you've worked on a lot of really cool projects. So there's this one, like I mentioned at the beginning, you've been on some of just the best shows, like Scandal. And so how does your daughter react hearing, like, mom's doing X, Y, or Z right now?
You know, she's really not that impressed.
because she's 15?
Yeah, she's just not impressed with anything that I do. She did want me to be in the Frozen sequel when she was younger, and when I didn't, you know, get the call, she was just like, "I guess you're just okay," you know what I mean? So it's interesting. She's used to me being on television, so it's just not a big deal to her.
And so you spent 117 episodes, speaking of being on television, in Army Wives, which was an amazing run for any show. It was an amazing show, and so. You must also have a lot of interesting fan encounters, I'd imagine. I would imagine also especially military from that show. But what has been one of your most interesting fan encounters?
Well, I absolutely loved playing that character, Colonel Joan Burton. And I was married to this this guy, little-known actor, Sterling K. Brown, I think his name is. But, yeah, we did 7 seasons together, and... what I loved about doing that show is I felt that this was the first time that a woman in the military, that a story had ever really been told about a woman's challenges who is active duty. Yeah. And because it is very, very challenging to have a family as well as to be an active member of our military services. Yeah. So I felt like this was a big opportunity for me to tell that story. So I really, really worked hard at that because I was like, this is the one chance that we're going to get to see the life of these women. I loved meeting the fans. There was one time in particular where I was just like getting my nails done, you know, nothing major. And the woman next to me is like crying and I'm like, happened to her, like, geez, like, what, something devastating, maybe she lost a loved one or a child or something, and I was like, ma'am, are you okay? And she was just like, I just love you on Army Wives. I was like, that's why you're crying? Nobody died? Oh, okay. Cool. You know what I mean? Like, literally, she was, like, so weepy. I thought that, you know, I did hug her because I was like, well, thanks. Gave her a hug. But that was, like, the weirdest thing. And then we were like, okay, back to nails, you know?
So she didn't keep talking to you after that? Was she too intimidated, you think?
I'm not sure. But, you know, we talked, and then she, you know, wiped her tears, and we both went back to getting her nails done. But The funniest thing about being on Army Wives is that, you know, that was on Lifetime, and the audience was primarily women. Mm-hmm. And so I would be in the airport or something, and some guy would come up to me and be like, "Hey, you Wendy Davis?" And I'd be like, "Yeah." And he's like, "My wife wants to take a picture with you. She's over there. You see that woman?" And then I'd like turn around, there'd be like, "Oh my God, like this." And I'd be like, "Oh yeah, sure." Like the husbands were like, so many husbands came over. And they always had this like slight attitude, like, "My wife made me do this. I've never seen, have you ever been on ESPN?" Then I don't get it. Yeah, like, you know what I mean? So they always had a slight attitude, uh-huh, like, "Really, lady? My wife made me do this." And then I'd go over and take a picture with the wife. But that was always very funny.
But do you think because they were a little embarrassed, like, what if you weren't Wendy Davis? Yeah. From approaching a stranger.
That is totally it. That reminds me of another time when I was, like, ordering food at the airport. I mean, I just hang out there all the time.
And I just live there.
And this woman's like, "You look just like Wendy Davis." She was behind the counter, and I was like, "Well, that's because I am." And she goes, "No, you're not." "No. Yes, I am." She's like, "You can't be Wendy Davis." And I was like, "Well, yeah." You know what I mean? So then it turned into this weird thing where I was like, "Here's my license." I mean, I literally was like, "Passport. Don't tell me I'm not." I mean, it just turned into this weird thing where I was like trying to prove to this lady, that this woman behind, you know, at Popeye's Chicken, that I was Wendy Davis. It was funny. But
I feel like that's one of those really funny, strange stories that you hear people talk about, and then living it must be like, right, like, how can I prove to you? Like, I swear I'm who I say I am.
Yeah. It was like, you know, you'd think that she would just take me, you know, at my word, right, but nope. I had to show her my license.
And then did she believe you?
And she believed me.
And did she ask for a photo?
Yeah, that she did. She asked for a photo. So, you know, she came around the counter and we took a picture.
And did you hug her?
Of course. You know, I'm trying to learn from the master.
That's what I was going to say. Master. You still have, like, these Oprah moments.
I'm trying to learn from the hug master.
Because all these women are going back home now and telling the same story. I saw Wendy Davis and I hugged her.
And she hugged me. Yeah. I'm hoping they're not saying, "She just felt like my aunt." I mean, maybe.
Why?
I could be.
I think that's a nice thing.
I know. And I do have lots of little nieces, so that I love. I love my little nieces.
I think that's a really nice thing because you know that you've touched people so much. Like this woman crying in the nail salon just by being next to you. I mean, weird. I'm trying to think, like, who would I cry so passionately over? Maybe Oprah, right? Did you cry?
If Oprah was in a nail salon, I probably would be like... I probably would cry. I tried my best not to look all thirsty while I was around her, but I'm sure she knew.
She's Oprah. She has to know,
right?
And it's one of those things, like you say anyway, no matter how many people you've been around, there are certain people that you meet and you're like, whoa.
Totally. Like, this is a moment.
Yes. Absolutely. This is my moment that I will talk about.
Yeah, it's sort of like your bucket list, like, check, Oprah.
I know.
You know what I mean? Totally.
And so when you were on Army Wives, did you also do a lot of, like, outreach to the military? Because you in particular were such a role model as active duty.
Totally. We did. And that was another thing that was so great because we got to actually meet a lot of military spouses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these people are the salt of the earth. I mean, I guess not having or not growing up in a military family, it was something that was very distant for me. I had really no idea of the sacrifice that these families make. And once I learned that, I mean, I just gained so much respect for them. So it was just always so good to actually meet them in person and to say thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for your sacrifice.
Absolutely. And on that show, like you mentioned, you worked with a little known spouse.
Yeah, Sterling K. Brown.
And you've got another very, you know, minor co-star coming up for a movie that you worked on too, Thor himself, right?
Yeah. Actually, no. This is Luke. who is he is one of the Hemsworths.
Those Hemsworths. Too many of them.
I mean, they're just all just beautiful, you know, just beautiful, big Australian men. And, you know, I mean, you know, what can you say? I mean, they're all, and they're all really talented. And I, you know, I was so surprised at how talented he was, maybe because he is so good looking. I was just like, those beautiful people.
Those Australians.
They never, you know what I mean? They don't have to work for it. But he was so good and so talented, and he was such a hard worker. And, I mean, I mean he's fantastic.
So. And so tell me a little bit about the movie. It's a bit of a sci-fi thriller, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm so excited. Well, the movie is about this strange pod that lands on Earth. And a group of friends pick it up. They don't know what it is. And then they take it back to their house, like you would do any strange pod.
Finders keepers.
You just never know what it could be, right? And so it's about the consequences of that, as well as in that show I play FBI, and we're trying to track down this this pod because we know something about it that they don't know.
And so, what was it like working as an FBI agent? Is this your first FBI agent? I was trying to, like, go back through and see.
You know, because I am, I want to say, I feel like I've always sort of played military, FBI.
But military is not the same.
Yeah.
Right, but you've been in that world.
Yeah, absolutely.
But FBI,
different
badge.
But that was cool, because I got to wear, I got to wear the cool FBI suit, and that was really fun, too. You know, but one of my favorite shows was doing, I did an episode of Designated Survivor where I was in a weightless environment, or I had to pretend that I was weightless. I was the captain of a, the commander of a space station. And that was super interesting because, you know, I was like acting as if I was weightless. And then I would like bump a cord or something and they'd be like, cut! You know, because anything that you touch really reveals that you're acting. So that was like a super interesting challenge. I've never had to think about my movements while acting before. So that was fun.
And so did you have to also concentrate on keeping your speech normal? Because I feel like that tendency is if you move slowly, you speak slowly, right?
I mean, that was the thing that was super challenging about it, was that I had to, you know, really think about what I was doing physically, and we generally don't do that. And so it was just a whole different component to acting.
So it's like that rubbing your head and patting your stomach.
Totally.
I feel like you're going to be like, Zoe, I'm an actor. Yes, I was able to do it. But
you guys don't have one of those, like, planes where, oh, we're not going to really do zero gravity? Oh, okay. You want me to act that? Okay. Yeah.
And so you've had a lot of great projects, obviously, and a lot that's coming up with Luke, not Liam. And so what else do you see on the horizon for you, or what are you hoping to explore next?
Right. Well, I tell you, so there's a couple of things. I have an acting school. It's called Acting Pros. And I absolutely love helping other actors. It's one of my favorite things to do when I'm not on set. And it's just such a pleasure to, you know, just like in this show, I am wiser Nuri, and I am advising women in the audience, like, don't worry about that so much. Well, I sort of feel like that as when I help other actors with my school, because I get to say, these are the things that you need to be focused on, and these are the things that you don't need to focus on so much. Like, you know, if you want to work in film and television, I don't really know about the sort of the theater trajectory, but if you want to work in film and television, these are the skills that you're going to need to develop, and that's one of my favorite things. And in terms of other things, I mean, you know, I did meet Oprah. That was on my bucket list. I want to do, I'd like to do another sci-fi. I'd like to do a Western. I want to do a Western. And I'd like to work with Denzel Washington.
All very good goals.
Yeah, that's like, and maybe after that I can just
That's
die.
It. Maybe you can like, wrap them up together.
Yeah, wouldn't that be amazing?
In a Western. Yeah. Now, speaking of Western, is that because you ride horses and you have for years?
Absolutely. Horses are my passion. Mm-hmm. And my daughter and I both share this passion. And, you know, horses are our spirit animals. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a story that hasn't been told. There are all kinds of people in the West, mm-hmm. and you rarely see that. Uh-huh. You know, there were just all kinds of folks running around out there, and I'd love to see a story about that, you know. And I want to do one really great, like, you know, just haul butt scene across some open plain on a paint horse, no bridle. No saddle, no bridle. Just kidding.
Just me.
Just me. I mean, just my stunt double. And
as long as it's not feeding time.
Yeah, right.
Down a hill, you're in good shape.
Exactly. Right. So Zoe was just, she was just telling me about her, how she almost died.
That's
on a
right.
horse.
Right before we started, I was telling Wendy about one of my horseback riding accidents. And that's exactly what I was doing.
It's not if, but when.
Yes.
And how bad.
Right. So do you think you'd be allowed to do any of your own riding, or is that too hard to insure?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, I wouldn't do anything crazy, but something like that, easy, just like barreling across. You know, an open plane. I mean, that's simple.
But Westerns, no helmet either. So your chances of
I have
problem.
Based on what my mother's told me, I have a very hard head. So I think
so
that'd be fine.
Change.
Yeah, I don't
no
need a
problem.
Helmet. Mom says I have a hard head.
So Denzel, we've got a co-star
with a hard head.
Where else to go?
Exactly. Well, you know, the thing about Denzel is, you know, I mean, he is. He's such a complete artist, and I have just grown up just really learning from him mm-hmm. as an actor. I've grown up appreciating the depth that he puts into his work, mm-hmm. and I've always wanted to work with him mm-hmm. and. Also, Meryl Streep, if you're out there.
Meryl.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, yeah, that's my bucket list.
Well, and it is funny. Actors have their own lists of, right, who you would like to work with.
Sure.
And like you said, you have met so many people. Did you ever have a moment where, you know, I know you were excited to meet Oprah, where you met someone and some things tumbled out of your mouth that afterwards you were like, how did this happen? That you were so excited to meet them that it just kept going.
I've never had that experience, uh-huh. but I have met some people that I had an expectation that they would be a certain way. Yeah. And then when I met them, I was disappointed.
Yeah.
So I've had that experience.
Can
I'm not going to mention
names?
Any names.
It starts with, it rhymes with Enzel.
I'm not going to do it.
No.
I'm not going to do
that
it.
That is so, and that's hard. And that is something that's so funny that I think everyone goes through of as much as you know that person is not a certain character, it's sometimes really hard to separate them from that character.
Totally.
No matter who you are or how often you have the opportunity to meet certain people. I mean, that
right.
is difficult.
Yeah, and, you know, I think when we meet our heroes, mm-hmm. we don't take into account that they may be having a hard day or mm-hmm. that, you know, they're not here to entertain us. That's the thing. So you got to give them a pass on that, I think.
Perhaps. But it sounds
Perhaps.
Like you've been so friendly with people. So anyone who gets to meet you gets a really great experience, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, you know, I will say that, you know, sometimes when I'm just out and about and somebody will say, like, hey, can I take a picture with you? Listen, if I don't have any makeup on, I'm probably not going to take that picture with you. Because I did that once, uh-huh. and that picture is on my Wikipedia. I'm like, how do I get rid of it? I mean, literally, I look like death warmed over. And I'm like, how is this my profile picture on Wikipedia? So that's my new rule. It's like, if no makeup, can't get a picture. Or I'm like, hold on, do you have filters on your phone? All right, well, you know, I'm going to have to do some adjusting, and then you can keep it, you know.
And that
but,
makes their story even better for when they go to their friends.
I kid you not. Like, I just took, like, this random picture, and it literally is, I can't get rid of it. It's just on there.
Everyone is very quickly now going, Wikipedia.
Yeah. Oh, my God. When you see that photo, you will understand why.
And on that happy note, so this has been so much fun.
Yeah.
And I know that you are on social media. So if people want to go and tell you, I checked out your Wikipedia photo, where can they find you on social media?
Yes, please tell me it's Real Wendy Davis. At Real Wendy Davis, and that's across all platforms.
And Wendy and I are sort of twins because I'm Real Zoe Hewitt, so you can find me
We're
there.
We're both so real.
I know, we are so real. It's hard to believe. Thank you so much for joining us, and it's been so much fun after Buzzers. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
The views expressed herein are those of the
host. Executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.